Kiddo.
Yep.
How you doing?
Good.
This is episode number 3.
Yep.
Welcome to
Great Gigs That Changed the World.
With me, Adam Burkett, age 42.
And me, Isaac Burkett, age 10.
And we are here to discuss the very greatest, most iconic and legendary music performances in the last 60 years, aren't we?
Yep.
What have we talked about so far?
So far, we've talked about Queen at Live Aid and Eric Clapton, MTV Unplugged.
That's right. And what's the gig we're going to talk about today then, Isaac?
Today we're talking about S&M.
Do you want to elaborate what that is?
Symphony and Metallica.
All right, so this is Metallica's well-known album from 1999, live performance and subsequent live album called Symphony and Metallica, S&M.
Yep.
And we've been doing plenty of research. You've got plenty of notes in front of you?
Yep, this one took up 2 pages.
It's quite a long concert. It's about 2.5 hours long, this, wasn't it?
Actually, it's two... Well, hang on a sec. Yep, I got it. 2 hours, 29 minutes, 12 seconds.
Wow, you've remembered precisely. And there's a documentary.
14 minutes, 12 seconds.
And we watched both, didn't we, this morning?
Yeah.
Well, we watched the first half of the concert yesterday, and then watched the documentary this morning, and then watched the second half.
This one is available on YouTube, unlike our previous episode.
That's right. So what do you think of the gig?
I thought it was sensational.
Yeah, I did too. So these are just our opinions, you know, and let us know if we get any of the facts wrong. We're trying our best to verify the details of these things as we go, but we'll inevitably make mistakes. Wikipedia ain't that accurate, as we all know. But we're trying our best, and we're just having a good time, aren't we?
Yeah.
We wanted to say thanks again to everybody who's been in touch to give us their thoughts and feedback on the podcast so far, which has been really lovely, hasn't it?
Yeah.
We've had a few messages, a few emails, we've had some comments on social media and all that kind of stuff, and it's been really nice to know that people are enjoying listening to it. So thank you so much for continuing to listen and download the podcast. We'd love it if you took the time to rate us, subscribe, and give us a 5-star rating. It really helps boost the listing on all the podcast platforms. So if you can do that for us, we'd be forever grateful, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Right, let's get into it then.
To start off, actually, I've been a little bit poorly the last couple of days.
You have.
So I might cough quite a bit in this episode.
That's all right. We've got a glass of water in front of you.
Yeah, I might have some now, actually.
Yeah, good idea. So if you get a bit of a cough, then you've got some water. But you're feeling okay, though, aren't you?
Mm.
A lot better today.
Yeah. Yesterday was the worst.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay, bit better today.
Yeah.
Make sure you keep talking into your mic.
Okay, yeah.
All right. So what's first on your list? What are we going to talk about first?
First, we're going to talk about the members of Metallica.
Okay, and Metallica in general, aren't we? We're going to talk about a little bit. So Metallica, shall I give a little rundown on what Metallica, what it is as an entity? So Metallica is an American heavy metal band formed in 1981 in Los Angeles by vocalist and guitarist James Hetfield and drummer Lars Ulrich, and has been based in San Francisco for its whole career. Band's fast tempos, instrumentals, and aggressive musicianship made them one of the founding big four bands of thrash metal in the early 80s, alongside Megadeth, Anthrax, and Slayer. The current lineup of the band consists of
James Hetfield on guitar, and vocals. For this particular concert, Jason Newsted on bass and backing vocals, Kirk Hammett on guitar, and Lars Ulrich on drums.
That's it.
With 104 other musicians.
Well, we'll come on to that, won't we?
But we won't discuss that.
We will.
I mean, all of the musicians.
We won't say everybody's name.
That would
take up the whole podcast, I would say.
The entire week.
Exactly. So, Metallica has released, since 1981, has released 11 studio albums, 4 live albums, including 2 performances with the San Francisco Symphony, 12 video albums, 1 cover album, 2 EPs, 37 singles, and 39 music videos. The band has won 10 Grammy Awards from 26 nominations and has 6 consecutive studio albums debut at number 1 on the Billboard 200.
I'm sorry, 10 Grammys. That's more than the Beatles won.
Is it really?
Yeah, they won 7.
Really? I thought the Beatles
nominated won, but... for 26.
Ah. Metallica has been listed as one of the greatest artists of all time by magazines such as Rolling Stone,
good one.
Which ranked the band in 61st place on its list of greatest artists of all time.
Not bad.
As of Metallica is the third best-selling music artist since the Nielsen SoundScan began tracking sales in 1991, selling 58 million albums in the United States
alone.
That's
way more than this album.
They are a huge band. I got into Metallica when I was sort of in my mid-teens.
You've been there. You've been to a couple of their concerts.
I did. I went to Berlin with a couple of mates when I was 19. Flew to Berlin, had a big night out in Berlin, and then went to watch Metallica in a massive outdoor arena.
Cool.
And it was one of the best gigs I've ever been to, actually, because it was really picturesque. It was a beautiful forest area that they dug this amphitheater out of, and we were right at the front. And then as Metallica were playing, it went dark. So by the end of the concert, it was dark, and they played all the big hits and stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
Really
and
cool.
You went to see them in London.
I saw them at Earl's Court as well, probably in about 2005, something like that. So, yeah, I was into Metallica big time for quite a long time when I was in my late teens.
Yeah.
Really, really liked them. And I thought this album, and it was actually this album that we're going to talk about that really got me into Metallica, which is quite a unique way into Metallica. Most Metallica fans really like the fast thrash metal stuff, the heavier stuff. Whereas I really liked this particular album because I really liked the idea, the concept of these two sort of genres or backgrounds or disciplines of music, you know, heavy metal and a symphony orchestra. It's just an amazing thing.
Yeah.
And what was quite interesting, I think, about this alchemy between these two sort of genres was that everyone was quite afraid of it, weren't they?
Yeah, they were very afraid because they were like this thrash heavy metal band, grungy almost. And then all of a sudden in like 1999, they decided to play with a symphony orchestra.
And all of their fans and everybody in the media and their critics were also like, what? Metallica playing a symphony. I mean, and it wasn't like it was the first time anyone had ever done this. There'd been loads of artists who had done stuff with orchestral backing.
Actually,
and stuff.
Michael Kamen, who symphonized and composed the orchestra, he had done this sort of thing with artists such as Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, and Pink Floyd.
Yeah, so it wasn't like he was. He was new to this. Michael Kamen was the maestro. He was the sort of conductor and composer for the San Francisco Symphony.
As I was saying to you earlier, he's worked with lots of people as well. He worked with Queen.
But no one had ever done this with a metal band before.
No.
And Metallica's fan base were really like a metal, you know, quite... You know,
tattoos, hairy, big
guys.
Yeah,
like typical kind of like metal fans, I suppose. And I think Metallica and James Hetfield particularly...
Yeah.
Was clearly quite nervous about the idea of this. He was a bit sceptical
about
whether it would work.
When we were watching the documentary. So James Hetfield seemed very worried.
Mm.
Lars Ulrich didn't really care that much about it.
Mm-hmm. It was Jason Newsted that was most passionate about it, I thought, and Kirk Hammett.
Yeah, Kirk Hammett. When we were watching the documentary and they were being interviewed, some people would possibly think that guys like these wouldn't really care about the music.
Mm.
They just enjoyed playing. But it turned out they actually used to love classical music.
Yeah, Kirk Hammett particularly studied a lot of classical music in the 80s. And, you know, we should mention as well that their original bass player, Cliff Burton, who was in the band between 82 and 86, tragically was killed when their Metallica tour bus crashed in 1986. Cliff was an incredible melodic musician, a brilliant bass player, but with a really lovely sense of melody as well.
So good.
And he really sort of pushed for these kind of like sort of counter melodies and sort of classical kind of tropes in the music. So it was always there in the background, but it took a long time for it to come to fruition. It was actually Michael Kamen from the San Francisco Symphony who approached Metallica because he did work with Metallica on the song Nothing Else Matters, which was released on the eponymous album Metallica in 1991 or 92.
First song of the second disc.
It is, and it's quite a vulnerable, non-traditional Metallica song. It's almost a ballad. And I remember seeing James Hetfield, who wrote it, saying he was quite embarrassed to bring it to the band because they used to always thrash metal tunes and stuff, and suddenly he's bringing like a ballad to the song. And he thought he'd never become a Metallica tune. He thought it was just for himself or for something else.
Yeah.
And all the band really liked it, so they took it, and it needed orchestral backing. So that's when they started working with Michael Kamen. It was actually Michael Kamen who approached them some years later. So I've got a fantastic little review here from the Loudwire website. So Kamen discovered Metallica in 91 when he worked with the producer Bob Rock on parts for the acoustic remix of Nothing Else Matters. Intrigued by the possibilities of a true collaboration, Kamen asked Metallica if he'd be interested in playing a set of their songs alongside his orchestra. The band agreed and provided Kamen a list of the songs they wanted to perform. Kamen crafted a cinematic soundtrack to the songs that augmented and enhanced the music with whirling violin and flute passages between riffs, martial horn and string parts to accompany some of Metallica's heaviest and well-known rhythms.
I know, I remember from the documentary, they were playing the album of Metallica on a speaker, and Michael Kamen had also already recorded the symphony orchestra.
He'd done the orchestral recordings, hadn't he?
So they played them at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's basically what the audience was going to hear.
And it was pretty amazing. So in the symphony, it was a full symphony orchestra of 104 musicians on stage, in addition to the four members of Metallica, and in addition to Michael Kamen, the maestro. It went on to become very, very successful as an album. It sold 300,000 copies in its first week, debuting at number 2 on the Billboard album chart in the US. And within 3 months, it was already a quadruple platinum album. And by 2003, it was quintuple platinum. So it was a very successful record.
What's quintuple?
5 platinum. So very, very successful album. And that was real justification for Michael Kamen and to Metallica for having the idea and the vision and pushing it through. And I think you in the actual documentary, there's quite a lot of interviews with some of the Metallica fans outside beforehand, and they're all going, yeah, I'm just a Metallica fan. I don't know really what this is about. I'm a bit sort of confused as to what it's going to be like. And it's quite a small venue.
There were some people who were like, this is wrong, they shouldn't be doing this as well.
Exactly.
We won't go too into detail about this. A little bit racist, but...
Oh, ignore that.
Yeah.
It wasn't racist. It was just a funny little opinion thing.
It wasn't funny. It was very serious.
Okay. What was interesting for me is after the concert as well, you had these, you know, hardcore Metallica fans who loved Metallica's thrash metal stuff coming out in tears about what they just witnessed. The power, the dynamic, the incredible sort of like nuance of the symphony backing up Metallica. And then no one knew what songs Metallica would play. Would they just play like acoustic versions like an MTV Unplugged? Would they play their full hardcore noisy stuff?
Bit of both.
With a bit of both. And they did. They did everything. They didn't do any acoustic stuff apart from Nothing Else Matters, but...
I was about to point that out.
Well, it wasn't even a full acoustic. It was just a bit of an acoustic... You know, James Hetfield played a semi-acoustic guitar, but it was still an electric, you know, kind of arrangement.
Yeah, because Kirk Hammett was still playing...
And had the big solo at the end and all that kind of stuff. But it was all beautifully augmented by this incredible symphony orchestra. So the set started out... So what was it? So Metallica had been known for years and years and years as for opening up their set with
Ecstasy of Gold.
Ecstasy of Gold, which is a classical piece of music. I forget who wrote it, which is bad of me. I should have wrote that down.
It was in the Disney film Onward.
It was. Well known, but it was always played as the track. It wasn't performed live in any Metallica show. But because it's a classical kind of symphony based track. Now, because they had the symphony orchestra, they could play it live for the first time. So before Metallica came on stage, the symphony, the Ecstasy of Gold was played by the San Francisco Symphony. It was a really cool moment.
Yeah.
And straight after that, they go into one of their well-known songs. I think it's Off Ride the Lightning,
it's Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, it's Off Ride the Lightning album. I think it is anyway. I'll have to check my notes. All my Metallica knowledge is quite old. Let me see if I can find. Yeah, whilst I'm talking, Ride the Lightning. Where are they? Where's Ride the Lightning? No, can't find it. We'll have to wait. I'll have to fact check that one later. So, Call of Cthulhu is an instrumental track which builds and builds and builds, and that was the first track. So, with Metallica on stage, and it's kind of a slower track, and it's an instrumental track without any vocals, and it builds and builds and builds and gets quite heavy by the end of it, and has a big sort of drop where the drums kick in and that kind of thing. And that was the moment where you saw the reaction from the audience, because you do you remember on the documentary, you saw the members of the band walk out and the noise the crowd made as each member walked out and started playing. It was really cool.
And I remember before the show, they were forced to dress up smartly. And
they weren't forced, they wanted to.
Really? James Hetfield was like, I'm not sure.
He wasn't sure about any of it. He was really nervous about this whole idea. It was such an experiment for a heavy metal band, particularly one with a big reputation, to try something so new and different like this. So I think we all sort of tip your hats off to people who take those risks and check if they work. Because if it doesn't work, there was never any risk of Metallica's sort of legacy being damaged, because they were already very established and popular by that point. But it was a risk in the sense that they could do this and it might not work.
Yeah.
And people might not like it. But it was the opposite. So by the end of Call of Cthulhu...
they started going into the proper rocking.
Yeah, all of a sudden it was like, oh my, they're actually going to do proper Metallica songs. They're not just going to mess about with like acoustic arrangements or stuff. They're going to do this properly. So it goes from Call of Cthulhu to...
Master of Puppets.
Which is one of their biggest, most well-known metal tracks. Yeah, exactly. There's loads of big accents and stuff, and it's really fast. It's actually about a 7-minute track, I think. And it's...
there's like a breakdown.
There's kind of like an acoustic-y bit in the middle with an amazing, epic guitar duel, like riff thing between Kirk and James. And then it goes back into the heavy stuff then with the big guitar solo. And it's just mega. And I think, what did you think when you first saw that?
Well, that wasn't the first time I'd seen Master of Puppets.
Mm-hmm.
As we established last week, one sec, just gotta...
You gotta sneeze?
Yeah.
So whilst you're doing that, I'll explain.
So,
no, don't do that.
Okay.
Just have a glass of water, have another swig. So we watched a different version of Master of Puppets last week, didn't we, on YouTube?
Yeah.
What did we watch?
So it was Metallica, a much older version.
So it was from 2019, 20 years later.
Yeah, of Metallica performing Master of Puppets in the absolute chucking it down rain.
In Manchester.
Yeah.
And there was so much rain all over the stage, all over them. They were soaking wet. There was loads of water all over the drums. Every time Lars hit a drum, there was sprays of water. It was really cool, actually. But it was quite different to the S&M version, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So what did you think when you saw the S&M version?
I thought, well, that was the first time I'd seen Metallica with Jason Newsted.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, wow, he's okay at bass.
I think he was great, actually, for Metallica. And he was a good backing vocalist.
I think Robert Trujillo's better.
The new bass player. So he's been since about 2003.
Yeah, that's correct.
So he's been 21. He's probably, he is the longest serving bass player now for Metallica. When I went to see them in Berlin, it was his first tour with Metallica.
That would be in 2003.
It was, that's when I saw them. Yeah, so I would have been 21.
Wow.
When I went to Berlin to watch them, which was really fun. So we had Master of Puppets, which was really set the tone for the concert at that point. Everyone then realised Metallica were going to do this properly and play their songs properly. What came next?
Okay, I really wanted to accept it. You read it. Fourth track.
Of Wolf and Man.
Say it again.
Of Wolf and Man.
Slowly.
Of Wolf.
Gang.
And Man. Of Wolf, Gang and Man. Very good. Very, very pertinent. They then did The Thing That Should Not Be. They did Fuel. And then they came to a song from their most recent album at the time, which was The Memory Remains. And the reason I thought it would be worth mentioning that one is because that was the one that, before they started playing it, James said, "We love it when you sing to the audience." Because it's got this big section at the end, this
sing-along.
Yeah, this massive sing-along. And what was really cool about it is they started singing along and the orchestra are doing their thing and it really sounds amazing.
Then it stops.
And then they stop. And what happened?
They kept singing.
They just kept going, didn't they? The audience just kept on singing.
And was it that one that James Hetfield went really high and squeaky at the end?
No, that's the next song.
Okay, okay, okay. The thing that... Oh, wait.
No.
The memory...
We've just done that.
Oh. No Leaf Clover.
Yeah, so No Leaf Clover was interesting. One. Yeah, so it was a brand new song. Well, it had been knocking around, according to James, for a couple of years on demo tape, but they hadn't performed it or recorded it properly, and they thought it would lend itself really, really well to this environment with the orchestra.
Lars and James wrote it a couple of weeks earlier, along with Minus Human.
Oh, it was a couple of years earlier.
No, it was a couple of weeks. A
couple of years that they wrote.
Weeks. Yeah. Was weeks.
You've forgotten because it was in the documentary.
No, I remember them saying weeks. There were subtitles for that bit and it said weeks.
Okay, let's say you're right.
So, yes!
So a couple of weeks.
Get in!
Okay, so they recorded it on demo and then they had this idea for it to do it. And it really does lend itself really, really well to the orchestra. And it's one of my favourite tracks on the whole gig, I think. It was really, really pretty amazing. What did you think of it?
Good.
Yeah. It has these dynamic drops, doesn't it? Where it drops down to just the guitar and James. You remember it has that weird effect on the vocal?
Oh yeah, like the...
Yeah. Really, really cool. And then he does, as you say, he does this thing with his voice at the end where he sort of flicks into falsetto, into this high voice on the end. And it's quite, as Jason Newsted puts it, it's quite like disturbing in certain ways. It's quite like losing your mind kind of vibes about it, which is quite interesting take on it. But I think it's a really cool song. It's one of my favourites on the album. What came after that?
Hero of the Day, yeah. Which we're not going to talk about.
Why?
Just because it's
not a ticked one.
A Devil's Dance and Bleeding Me.
So Bleeding Me was the last track of the first
set.
Half. So obviously they had an interval because it's like an orchestral thing.
Yeah.
So they had an interval. And Bleeding Me was a track off their most recent... It was either off Load or Reload, I forget. And it wasn't particularly critically acclaimed as an album or as a track, but I love that track. It's kind of like slower and it kind of goes in different directions. And I think James Hetfield's soaring vocals in that is amazing. So highly recommend. And it was a lovely, lovely way to finish the set.
Yeah.
And do you remember what he says at the end?
Friends, we shall be back.
Almost. He goes, thank you, friends. We shall return. And then he just walks up. And it was really, really cool. And by that point, everyone's just in raptures. It was really cool. So they took a break, came back.
15 minutes or so.
And what did they open with? Second half?
Nothing Else Matters.
So this was the track that spawned the whole idea of doing Metallica with the symphony. And James sits down for this one, doesn't he?
Yeah, he also sat down for Call of Cthulhu and The Thing That Should Not Be.
I think James Hetfield is so cool.
He rode in on a motorbike in the documentary.
He's so cool. I don't know what it is about Hetfield. I think he's just got his image down. He's an amazing, amazing musician.
I think
underrated as a guitarist, I think. So I think Kirk Hammett gets a lot of the plaudits for his lead guitar work, but Hetfield can play.
I think Hetfield's cooler now than he was back then.
You think? Yeah. Oh, he's always been cool, Hetfield.
The thing
apart
is,
from when he had a really bad mullet in about 1982.
I thought he had like a mullet in.
No, it wasn't really a mullet. He just had his hair scraped back.
I also didn't like how he had a goatee and no mustache. Did you ever had a goatee and no mustache?
No, never done that. Never done that. But he's ultimately very, very cool and confident, or he certainly comes across as confident. Brilliant singer as well. Great metal singer.
Totally.
And a great front man. That's the other thing. He conducts, and there's something about it. He stands on stage, powerful. He plays. Yeah, I don't know what guitar he plays. I'm not a guitarist.
It's a wooden one.
It's a very notable shape. It's quite unique, and it's very Hetfield. You know,
it's
very
wooden.
Very cool.
Yeah. And in the Master of Puppets video in 2019, they had waterproof mics as well.
Right.
I'm not so sure you knew that.
Oh yeah, that's right. Obviously, when they were playing in the rain, they could get away with it back in 2019. Yeah,
it's Britain's forecast.
Well, it was always going to rain in Manchester, wasn't it?
Oh yeah,
always does. So anyway, Nothing Else Matters. And then what came next?
No.
Until It Sleeps.
Which we.
And then.
For Whom the Bell Tolls.
That was the one that we watched this afternoon and we both went, wow. For Whom the Bell Tolls, really well known, very famous Metallica. I think that was also off Ride the Lightning. I think, early Metallica history is a bit sketchy. But well, really well known, but the orchestral backing to it was so huge. And you got Newsted at the front doing that bass lick at the beginning and all that. Oh, it was just mega. And we both thought that was amazing. That was at the end of that one. It was Hetfield who said that felt pretty good. Did you guys enjoy it? You know, he was just at this point. I still felt all the way through the concert that Hetfield was a bit nervous that people weren't quite getting this.
Yeah, at the beginning.
But I think by that point,
after Master of Puppets, he was like, "They like it."
Yeah, he said, "Hey, they like it," because no one knew whether this would work, and that was so cool about it.
There was a joke in the documentary actually. So. I think was supposed to metaphorize that he wasn't sure about this. He said about the second violinist, do you know this one?
No.
That she stole his sandwich.
Oh, yeah. He was only joking.
And yeah, they, I think that...
What was really nice is that there were loads of like Metallica fans in the symphony, and they kept coming up and saying, can I have an autograph?
Yeah. During the break, I think it was.
Yeah. It was really cool. But that, I think by that track, For Whom the World Tolls, I think Hetfield was into it and really like... realised that everyone really was enjoying it and was got on board with the concept. So then came Minus Human, which was the other new track that they tried out. Not a massive fan of that.
Yeah, you skipped it because we didn't have enough time.
We didn't have enough time to watch all of these. So I sort of meant forward to the ones I thought were most useful for the podcast. Wherever I May Roam is a really, really big Metallica tune that was really, really good.
The Outlaw Torn.
Outlaw Torn's one of their newer albums at the time, either Reload or Load. Sad But True was from Metallica, their really, really most popular commercial record.
One, which was about a soldier in World War One, and it's got Lars Ulrich and Kurt... What's it? I've forgotten his name.
Kirk Hammett.
Yeah. James Hetfield doing like... Bang, 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 bang.
It's that... thing, yeah. So Lars does this thing with his double bass pedals, and it's meant to sound like gunfire.
Machine guns.
Yeah, and it drops down to this very, very powerful bit.
In the music video, this is actually based on a true story in World War One. A soldier has his arms, legs, and jaw blown off
by a landmine, and that was the basis of the song, wasn't it?
What even is a landmine?
Well, it's like a bomb that you stand on, that's hidden in the ground. If you stand on it, it blows up and it blows your legs off. It'll kill you.
Wow.
Not very nice.
And not very nice.
Not very nice.
When you say not very nice, isn't that like torture?
Yes, it's very bad.
You said not very bad.
No, very, very bad.
Right.
Very bad. Anyway, that's what the song was about. And I think it was another song that really lent itself well to the orchestral arrangements because it has this massive dynamic and it changes through different sections. Pretty amazing. So by this point, we're coming towards the end of the concert and you can see the difference in the audience. So it's all seated as opposed to the normal Metallica thing, which is all standing, but everyone's standing at this point.
Yeah.
Even the people that were there for the symphony and didn't know anything about Metallica, everyone's into it by this point. We come on to Enter Sandman, which is obviously probably the most well-known commercially successful track of Metallica's entire career.
It's a very light, there's a cool guitar riff at the beginning as well.
Very cool guitar riff all the way through it. It's a very, very cool song. And then the last song is almost a bit of a surprise. It's Battery. I forget which album from. It's one of the early ones. But it's back to their sort of thrash metal. It's like their thrash metal roots going back to it. And it's a really strong end. What was amazing to me was how amazing the orchestral arrangements were that fit in with Battery, which has got some interesting rhythmic stuff going on. And it's quite an aggressive vocal. And I love it. It's really, really cool.
A little secret about that is... we actually didn't watch it.
Oh, I've watched it.
I haven't.
You can watch it later. We'll watch it when we get home. Very, very cool. And I don't know if there was an encore beyond that. I can't remember. That might have been the end of it.
I think that was the encore.
But what was very, very cool was then seeing the reaction of all the Metallica fans afterwards. Do you remember? What do you remember? Go closer.
Close enough?
Yeah.
So, there were lots of, like, these big, beefy, hairy guys. No offence.
Offence taken. Carry on.
Sorry. I need water. Oh, wait. There's a cough coming up.
This is called dead air, Isaac. You're supposed to talk. What are you doing?
So, basically...
Don't just speak with the fingers on your neck.
Too late.
Come on.
So,
So what happened after the concert? What was interesting about these beefy, hairy guys?
No offense.
Carry on.
So they're all shedding tears.
Yeah.
In the documentary.
Really moved by it, weren't they?
Yeah.
And it was a really big deal.
There are even some of these guys who didn't think it was a good idea, saying it was one of the best experiences of their life.
Yeah, exactly. So what did it mean for Metallica going forward then? Do you know what happened next? Have I told you?
No.
So they kind of went back to their roots a little bit after this. So what happened was, I was in 1999. They split up with Jason Newsted, the bassist, in about 2001. They then went through a difficult period, which is actually documented in a very interesting documentary called Some Kind of Monster. So for about a year, or maybe more, they had cameras following them as they were trying to write their new album, which was called Saint Anger. Which, fairly divisive record, lots of people don't like it. It was Trujillo's first album, and produced by Bob Rock, but it was very, very lo-fi with low production. And at the time, James Hetfield was struggling a lot with his mental health.
Oh.
And so he didn't want to work very much. And he was, I think he was in rehab for a while.
I thought you told me this morning that they took good care of themselves.
Well, not always. I think nowadays they might. But so anyway, that led to the next album, which was quite different. It couldn't have been more different to S&M, really. And I sort of lost my love for Metallica sort of after S&M, really. I didn't think much of what they've done recently, although critically there's been a couple of albums most recently that people have quite enjoyed, the ones where they've gone back to their sort of thrash roots, like Death Magnetic, I think, was quite well received. Not my cup of tea.
Actually, they had a new album released last year.
They did. I don't know how that's gone down. They're still making music and still very active, and they must be in their late 50s or 60s now, Metallica, but they're still, you know, rocking it out, smashing it out. But it kind of broke down the door a little bit about this sort of fusion kind of idea of fusing two different types of music together, which I think is really, really cool. And they went on to do S&M 2 in 2019.
Surprise!
And they did a lot of the same stuff again with some added stuff. And it's a different sort of concert. From what I remember, Isaac, it's all like a circular stage with audience all around them.
Was it in the same place?
No, it was a bigger place, a bigger concert. I think it'd be interesting to look at it and see how it was different. So maybe we'll have a watch of that if you're up for it.
Maybe. You said it wasn't that good.
I've not seen it. I didn't say it wasn't that good. I'm just saying that the original was amazing.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the second one's like. We'll have to watch it. It's probably, from a technical perspective or a production perspective, will be great because it'll be 20 years later, so it'll sound and look better.
But it wouldn't have been composed and symphonized by the same person because...
Unfortunately.
Oh, can I say this?
If you want.
Michael Kamen died 4 years after S&M.
He did.
So that would be in 2003.
And I think... maybe Metallica would have done more with the symphony if Kamen had survived. But yeah. We'll never know. But anyway, they came back and they had a different musical director for the symphony in 2019, and they did a whole new concert. So they obviously thought it worked, and it was commercially a big success, S&M. And a really interesting album. And what the reason that we included it on our list of favourite and most important gigs is because it moved the game forward and brought two genres together. That's the main thing, because up until that point, metal music was kind of off to one side and not considered mainstream, and Metallica did something amazing by bringing it mainstream, I think, making it more sort of palatable for the mainstream market. And it's a brilliant album, isn't it?
Yeah.
Would you recommend people go and have a listen?
Yep, and you can watch it on YouTube. Unlike the last concert that we did.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it's not available.
Don't know. You can also obviously listen to it on Spotify. So highly recommend going have a listen and see what you think.
Yeah.
It's one of those gigs that I wish I was at, definitely.
Yeah.
I'd love to have been there for that.
Did you have the album?
I did.
Because we were listening to one of your old albums from when you bought it.
At Grandpa's earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I had the CD as well, yeah, of S&M. It was a double CD. And I bought the DVD, I think, as well.
I wonder if they still have it.
Yeah, maybe. So that's that. That's that album. We're going to come back with a new episode pretty soon.
Hopefully next week.
Maybe next week if we have time to do our research and record a podcast. What's the album we're going to talk about next time?
sort of an album. It wasn't a live album.
Wait. Sorry, I didn't mean album. I mean live gig.
Wait, was it a live album?
No.
Really?
Yeah. Some of the performances are featured. Tell people what it is.
I just make it a dramatic build-up.
Okay. Okay.
So, it was in 1969 on the 31st of January on top of Apple Corp Limited Studios by... On top, I mean on the roof. Can you guess what it is?
I know what it is.
Yeah, I know you know what it is. I'm talking to my brain.
Oh, okay.
Beatles.
The Beatles.
Beatles rooftop gig.
And am I right in saying it was their last ever live performance together?
Yeah. Afterwards, I think Paul McCartney and John Lennon stopped talking to each other.
So we'll talk about that next time.
Yeah.
There's obviously a very cool documentary recently released called Get Back.
2021.
Which was mega. I loved that documentary. It was fantastic to see how the
I've only watched the first episode and the concert at the end of the last episode.
Well, maybe we can watch a bit. Now you're a bit older, you might enjoy watching a bit more of that.
Yeah.
It's very cool. All right. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah. So if you want to let us any comments, go to...
You can carry on talking.
Yeah, but I don't know the email address.
Oh, greatgigsthatchangedtheworld@gmail.com. Yeah, drop us a line if you want to say anything, if you want to give us some feedback, if you've got any recommendations for gigs that you think we should talk about, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
In the meantime...
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Ciao.